Welcome to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches and a production of the 224 Ecospace, where changemakers work, create, and lead. Today, we are fortunate to have with us Tracy Flater, the co-founder and executive director of Playhouse on Park. They are in the midst of a production of The Scottsboro Boys at the Playhouse on Park in West Hartford, Connecticut, June 22nd through August 4th. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Shelley.
Glad to have you here. So tell us a little bit about Playhouse on Park and the background.
Sure. Well, Playhouse on Park is located on Park Road in West Hartford. Most people know it by the place next to A.C. Peterson's.
Absolutely.
The famous ice cream store that's been there for about 100 years. And we are just ending our 10th season and celebrating our 10th anniversary as a professional theater in West Hartford.
And that's amazing to have existed for 10 years. In the Connecticut area. So talk about this production that we have coming up.
Sure. This is the final production in our 10th anniversary season, and our artistic directors, Sean and Darlene, tend to put together the season with a little bit of a theme. And the theme for season 10 was all about bravery. I think if you read the letter from the artistic directors in our program, we talk a lot about the bravery of taking over the abandoned theater space and creating a nonprofit theater in 2009 when the economy was so horrible, and all of the efforts that we have made along the way, but taking brave and bold choices. So lots of reasons bravery come into play, but I think the Scottsboro Boys itself is a true show in many ways about bravery. So that's sort of how we picked it as our closing show, and we're really, really proud to present the work.
Now, for many people, American history often is a story that's untold. People don't necessarily know what it means. So you could hear the word, oh, the Scottsboro Boys play is happening, and you might just think it's something lighthearted happening in the city of West Hartford. What's the story of the Scottsboro Boys in a nutshell? Why is this such a provocative play?
You know, it is the story of some young men back in the 1930s who were falsely accused of rape. It's based on a true story. It is written brilliantly by Kander and Ebb, who wrote Chicago and Cabaret. They tell the story in its truest form, yet it's a musical. So there are lighthearted moments, there are profound moments, there are tragic moments. I think all in all, you will understand what happened back then, and it's important that people know today what happened then and what continues to happen in this world.
And you're really doing an amazing push to really engage people in the community with this production. Talk about some of the activities that will be happening around the play.
Sure. Well, again, we feel it's a story that must be told, and therefore we want to make sure we have an audience to hear it and see it and of course feel it. So because not everybody would know what the Scottsboro Boys means, we created a subcommittee of our board of directors it's an education and outreach committee to get out into the community and really talk about the play. So for months and months and months, we've gone in, to different groups and spoken about what the show is about and offered as much information as we can about group rates or affordable ticket options, and just tried to really educate people on why it's important for them to come or for them to advocate for groups of people that they're involved with to come and see the show. And that includes students and young adults, trying to find ways or organizations that are gathering in the summer and getting them over to see the show. So one component of the committee has really been almost marketing the show, but really to targeted audience. The other pieces we did a lot of work looking at, I think we talked earlier that the Playhouse is only the 7th theater in the country to produce the work. And we read everything we could about those other productions. And one of the things that we kept hearing is that never before had people really wanted to talk about what they had just seen. And a critic in Chicago said he literally paced the lobby after the show for 30 minutes, just wishing that there was someone there he could talk to. So we have decided to add a talk back with the cast after every single performance. Normally we just do a Sunday afternoon talk back, but we will have 40 talk backs. So every audience member who would attends can stay and just talk about what they saw, ask the actors questions, share their feelings about the work. And we think that's really, really important. And we have also reached out and we have found 40 people in the community to facilitate the talkbacks with us and for us. And these are people that are maybe more comfortable talking about race or facilitating a discussion. But the hope is that they'll gain a little bit more trust of the audience because it's sort of their forte in being there. So we're really excited about that. We are also working in tandem right now. The Connecticut Historical Society was the first stop on the national tour for the exhibit, The Life and Times of Racism During Jim Crow. And so that is happening right now, ironically, while the Scottsboro Boys is open. So we are holding a joint forum on July 30th that is free and open to the public. It is already promoted on their website. Where you get to tour the exhibit. There'll be some wine and cheese, and then we have a handful of guest panelists, and the theme of the evening will be, can museums and theaters help with the discussion of race? So we're really, really looking forward to that.
Now, you mentioned that for some of the people who had seen it in other locations, they felt the need to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so obviously you saw the production somewhere else. Why did you want to bring it here, and why do you think it's so important to talk about what people see on the stage?
I think one of the things that the Playhouse does well, and maybe it's because of the intimacy, maybe it's because of my artistic team, we really do a good job at telling stories that move you, that have heart, that sort of thrust a conversation that you might not be willing to have in your laps and force you to have it. And I think this show fits all of the criteria of a show that we would want to do, but it's not really well known. So it's a risk, and we do try to take risks when we can. But with risk comes the risk of losing money and not having audiences. So it's a tough sell for the board. And I'm just really proud that they paid attention to why we felt this story needs to be heard and why we are the right ones to tell it in this community. And they trusted us. So hopefully it'll all work out the way we think it will, but I'm confident that it will. I'm confident.
And what's powerful is time has a way of coming together. The documentary, docudrama, When They See Us has just come out on Netflix, and people are abuzz about what they see with the Central Park Five. And so how do you see that story aligning with the Scottsboro Boys?
Sadly, it seems like the exact same story, just 60 years apart, which is really tragic in so many ways. And I think the only benefit to it happening at the same time is I think more people will be open to coming and seeing our work. It will help, you know, like with social media and everybody needing to be on screen time. I think if they hear that there's something that is similar to what they're really enjoying on television, we might actually get them into the theater for live theater. So they're, you know, that might be the biggest plus about both shows happening together, not the fact that history repeated itself and continues to repeat itself. And it's a shame.
And it's something that we all definitely need to talk about. We're going to be joined by two of the actors, Ivory McKay and Tori Linder. They'll be joining us on this as well to have conversation about the Scottsboro Boys. So, Tracy, when you think about your own life and your own experience as a parent, as one that cares about other young people, what was your sense of the When They See Us and the Scottsboro Boys? What do you think is the message to parents about what could possibly happen to their children in this society?
Gosh, I think a lot of it is that life isn't fair, and you can't always control that. And I think you just have to live your best life, and that's all you can ask for.
And clearly you're doing great work in West Hartford with Playhouse on Park for these important conversations to come up. So maybe we can do something about it. And history doesn't have to keep repeating itself.
Hear, hear.
Thank you for being with us, Tracy. And in the next segments, we'll be talking with the actors, Tori Linder and Ivory McKay. Thanks again for being with us.
Thanks so much.
No, I think the Scottsboro Boys. And tell something about how you came to make up that song and... You know the Scottsboro Boys, don't you? Haven't you met them? Tell who they were and what their case was and how you met them.
Yes, ma'am. Miss, I'll tell you all about the Scottsboro Boys, because we had a sale once. When the Scottsboro Boys both got out and down that hard world, that Alabama's a hard world down there. And the Scottsboro Boys had a long time, 6 years that time, them four boys what got out. And I met them, and the boys had such a hard time, and I've been through down in that hard world, but I didn't stay long. And when I saw the Scottsboro Boys, I shook their hand again and thinking about, and hear what I said about the Scottsboro Boys, because I know they had a hard time. And here the advice I give Joe Lewis, and this is the advice I give to all the Harlem colored people, and what I mean all the good colored people. Go ahead and beat it out. Alabama, and you better watch out. The landlord gets you gonna jump and shout. Scottsboro boys, they can tell you what it's all about. For them landlords, if they get you, boy, they gonna hang you. Go to Alabama, and you better watch out. The landlord gets you gonna jump and shout. Scottsboro boys, tell you what it's all about. I'm gonna talk to Joe Lewis and send to Lizzie me. Don't you never try to make nobody in Alabama read. And you better watch out. The landlord gets you gonna jump and shout. Scottsboro boys, hey, what it's all about. Put the Alabama and you better watch out. The landlord gets you gonna jump and shout. Scottsboro boys, hey, what it's all about. I'm gonna tell all the colored people they've been on Sugar Hill. Don't you never go to Alabama to try to live. Even in Harlem swing. Don't you never go to Alabama to try to sing. Go to Alabama and you better watch out. Landlord, you're gonna jump and shout. Scottsboro boys, tell you what it's all about. Go to Alabama and you better watch out. Landlord, you're gonna jump and shout. Scottsboro boys, tell you what it's all about. Beat it out.
Beauty, what did the Scottsboro boys do anyway to get in all this trouble?
Well, they was down there and they supposed to have been riding on a freight train. And they're riding in the boxcar and they run up on some white women. They was had on pants and they was riding too. All was supposed to have been beaten away up to coming this way. And so down in Alabama, I guess the train stopped in the yard down there somewhere. Well, and some of them found all the boys and girls in the same boxcar. Some was different cars. And so I guess it's some of the people down there, they just said, well, they see them boys now with them white women. That was the trouble about it. Then they went out and made some loud cry about the boys being there with the women, you see. That is all it was to it. They just saw the women. They didn't see nothing else wrong. But anyhow, they put the boys in jail, and in that 6 long years, well, the state, all the whole United States got together, and they got out 4 of them, and they come to New York. And the lawyer what got him out, I know him pretty good. I've met him. And he showed me the Scottsboro boys, and I shake hands with them, so I made this little song about down there. So I advise everybody to be a little careful when they go along through that, but stay woke, keep the eyes open.
Da 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 choice. Spend it on the have not money. We make it for we see it. You take it. Oh. This ain't living. No, no, baby. This ain't living. No, 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 no. Inflation. No chance to increase finance. Bills pile up. Sky high. Send that boy off to die. Oh, maybe wanna holler the way they do my life. Yeah, maybe wanna holler the way they do my life. Oh, baby.
We get what we deserve. We've been built, and been really fast talking about as sure as you moan. Just as sure as it takes 2 eyes to make a pair. Brother, we can't quit until we get our share. Say it loud. Say it loud. One more time. Say it loud. I've worked on jobs with my feet in my hands. You know all the work I did before the other man. But now we done made a chance to do things for ourselves. We're tired of beating our head against the wall and working for someone else. Say it loud. Say it loud. Say it loud. Say it loud. Someone else. Look here, there's one more thing I got to say right here. Now, we're people. We like the birds and the bees. We'd rather die on our feet. Keep living on our knees. Say it loud. Say it loud. Say it loud. Lord, Lord, Lord. Say it loud.
Back. We're here joined by actors Tori Linder and Irie McKay, who are a part of the Scottsboro Boys production at Playhouse on Park in West Hartford. And the Scottsboro Boys will be playing from June 26th through August 4th in West Hartford. Welcome.
Yes, thank Hello. You. So, hello. Thank you.
Glad to have you here. Yep. So give us a little bit of background on why you decided to go for this production and why it's important to you. So we'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I've been wanting to do Scottsboro Boys for a very long time, just because of what it represents. And what it means to me really is it's about the justice in which America is going through at this current moment. And obviously in 1931, I mean, nothing has really changed up until that point. So I believe that the story needs to be told. And it's just, I think, heavily important to all 13 of us in the cast. So, yeah.
So what about you?
I saw the
show. And this is Ivory talking.
Yes, it is. I saw the show on Broadway, and and you hear often that things change your life. And after seeing the production, I just needed to do the show because I was prepared to carry the responsibility of informing and bringing people back to the happening of it. I looked to audition for, I was so thankful that Playhouse and Park was doing the production. And so going to the audition, I was just thankful for the opportunity to, like, you know, throw myself in the mix. And it ended up that I got the, you know, part, and it was, I'm just happy that I have the opportunity to inform.
And so real. Yeah.
And yeah. So by way of background, Tori, why don't you share the story of what was the story of the Scottsboro Boys? What happened?
Well, in 1931, nine boys were quite literally taken off of a train because they had gotten in a fight with some other boys, white. They were taken off the train. Two girls spotted the African-American boys and then said they raped us. Because of this cause, an uproar was built in the town of Scottsboro, Alabama. Took the boys, and they basically said, your lives are no longer valid because you have done this crime, even though you didn't. Right. So, I mean, like, it was falsely accused. And over the years, I mean, they just, these boys had to sit in prison. I mean, essentially, again, as we spoke about earlier, they were basically they were executed mentally over time.
Yes.
I mean, that was pretty much it. That their lives were in prison, and their lives essentially ended in prison.
And so
because of this.
Unpacking the story, when we look at the experience, back in that time period, and there's a PBS documentary that's available to people that want to know more about the Scottsboro Boys. The two women that were on the trains, it was against the law at that time for women to cross city or state lines.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So these two women, they were calling all of them hobos, which is sort of the times.
Right.
Everybody was a hobo.
Right.
And these two women were on the train. Mm-hmm. It was against the law for them to be on the train. Mm-hmm. There was a fight that broke out between the white hobos and the black hobos.
Right.
And so when the train stopped, the women, not wanting to be in trouble themselves, put blame on the young black boys that were on that train.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And so suddenly this opens up a whole new experience in their lives.
Yeah.
Their ages 13 to 19.
Mm-hmm.
And so Ivory, talk a little bit about the fellows that were on the train. Who were the nine?
We had Heywood Patterson.
Heywood Patterson.
Clarence.
Roy Wright.
Owen.
Eugene Williams.
Olin Montgomery.
Ozzie Powell.
Thank you.
Eugene Williams.
Andy Wright as well.
Andy Wright, yes.
And then Charles.
Roy Wright. And Charles.
Yeah.
Yes, Charles Weems.
And so here are young people, ages 13
to 19,
that are accused of raping these women.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So in the production of the Scottsboro Boys, how is this explained, or how does the show open to tell this part of the story?
Well, the show opens where we, as the sheriff and deputy, remove the boys from the train. They are asked, why were they on the train? What's going on? And then we then meet Ruby and Victoria Price and Ruby Bates.
Yep.
And they then explain colorfully that these nine boys raped us. And then they go into song and dance about how it happened. Mm-hmm. And that is how it's explained in the show.
And so what's an amazing thing is that for these young men that are taken off the train, given the times, they could have been lynched immediately.
Correct, right away.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so they just happened to be near Scottsboro. And so that's why the case took the name of the Scottsboro area.
Right.
So talk a little bit about this particular kind of play, because the playwrights have their own way of producing. Give a little background on those who produced it, Candler and Ebb.
Candler and Ebb, yes. They have a fantastic history of using the musical theater genre in bringing to the table very dark, complex political issues.
But in a way that's edible.
Yes, edible, exactly. Yeah. Great word. Great, yes. In a way that's edible for entertainment as well as deep thought.
Without a doubt.
Exactly.
Chicago and Cabaret. And,
exactly. Yeah. To like name a few, to a couple. And so this show is right down there, right up their alley. And it is done through a very old vaudeville style. The minstrel style show, which is another thing. And, they bring to the table this story of the nine Scottsboro boys, and it covers it all very well, and how it was done, the injustice, the men and women that the Scottsboro boys encounter along with the trials. And so I mean, it's crafted so well. Every song in the show brings to the table the topic they face, the injustice, the characters.
Strategically, they fit everything in perfectly.
Yes, it does.
So again, as we spoke about earlier, it really is a moment where you're not allowing yourself to feel too down.
Absolutely.
You will feel that way because of the story itself, but because of the play and the way it's all fused, you're then able to have the moment where you can think.
Yes.
And say, okay, all right.
Right.
Like, and I'm here for it.
And we're doing all these numbers and things like that. And just to know that it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Just to know their faces and to know that, okay, here we go. This is real.
Here are these young people that have been taken off a train, accused of a crime they did not commit,
100% did not
at risk of being lynched right from the beginning, brought into prison, held there, needing legal representation, being poor, not having the money for legal representation, and in comes legal defense. Talk about that, Ivory.
Legal defense, the first lawyer they hired to represent the boys, he was
a real estate attorney.
Right. Yes.
A real estate attorney.
A real estate attorney who
and someone was, picked him and said they picked him, paid money off.
Right.
And said, could you just do it for a favor?
And he was a drunkard.
And that was it. He was a drunkard. He didn't want to be there. He knew that they were going to be executed.
Right.
He didn't
care. Came to the trial, represented the boys, completely intoxicated. Mm-hmm. And the show covers it. Well, and covers it, sums it up right away, and that's the first lawyer ever.
That's the first lawyer.
And then they get...
And then in comes
Leibowitz.
Aside from playing Tambo, I'm playing Leibowitz as well. So his story actually is that he's a part of the Communist Party.
Mm-hmm.
The Communist Party actually saw this as an opportunity to be able to kind of up their party itself. Right. The image of image of their party. What was so good, what was so great about Leibowitz himself is that he was the second best at the time. He was their second best choice. With that being said, though, he was this man of like he had the stature about him that he was like, I'm going to go in and take care of this. Mm-hmm. I'm a man of the North. It's done. You know, long story short, it obviously was a lot harder than he thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And in the story and the show itself, only, the time will tell and you'll be able to see that all. Mm-hmm. But all in all, I don't want to give too much away
the Alabama characters. So I play the lawyer, the first the prosecutor, and as well as the attorney general. And so I'm giving you full-blown color of what the boys had to deal with and how they were spoken to and how they were, the injustice went from when they were taken off the train into the courthouse.
Uh-huh.
And so when we think about what happened to those young men ages 13, I mean, for anyone who is a parent, you can just think about your 13-year-old child out of your care, mm-hmm. being controlled by the criminal justice system, mm-hmm. lawyers representing them. And then what people don't often know is there were three cases. It went three times.
Yes, it did.
So three trials over the course of how many years before they were?
Before four were taken out of prison, it was right. actually 6 years.
Yes.
It had been 6 years by that point. And then after that, the other five over time just kind of stayed in, or someone escaped at some point.
Right.
Yeah. So.
And so it was really the course of a significant portion of a lifetime, this yes. trial going on and mm-hmm. on. And Leibowitz, a great attorney, mm-hmm. was able to keep them basically alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But were they alive? Talk about the mental duress of the experience of these young men while being in this system.
I think it just it manipulates and erodes your sense of self, your identity, they were from 13 to 19, and in those times you are just regular, simple, like, I'm going to go after what I want, I'm going to do what I do, I'm going to see what I can see, I'm going to explore. And to know that that was just grossly taken away from them, mm-hmm. ripped out of their hands, and it's something so hard to take, because who was actually, they yeah. say the women were raped, but these boys were raped of their identity, their life. Mm-hmm. And that is something to say. That is something to talk about. Mm-hmm. And who can survive if they have no way to, mm-hmm. Talk about it and to define what happened to them.
And it's so interesting.
To get tools of how can I rebuild after being stripped of my humanity by the darkest evil of them all?
And they're still black men of a certain time. Uh-huh. And so Absolutely. Just being a black man in general meant yes. that it was going to be a challenge to have livelihood or right. to have some levels of economic freedom. And uh-huh. definitely the dignity of black men wasn't readily available.
No.
And yet you add this criminal side to things. In this case, it really was a dehumanizing experience for
them. Yeah, without a doubt. Just to go off of what you were saying, the height of their identity. I mean, again, they were 13, between 13 and 19 years old.
What are you doing at
13
and 19?
They were kids. They didn't even, sure they had an idea of what the identity was, but they were still trying to figure that out. They still didn't even have an idea at the height of the depression that was going on. So they're literally going off trying to find jobs. These are kids.
One of the kids was just trying to get some money so he could get glasses.
Yes, Olin Montgomery.
That's how he ended up on the train, just trying to get money to buy glasses.
No, and to the path that they went on just took them completely away from life. It's just so hard to digest.
And there's a song that's in the production called I Want to Go
Back Home.
Yeah. All right. And so we'll listen to that, and then we'll be back after the break.
Awesome.
Lying all alone, I'm thinking, staring at the stars. I wonder, since I've been away, I'm lonely, when I'm gonna go back home. Walking through the world, things happen right before your eyes. Things happen, soon enough you're lost. I'm thinking when I'm gonna go back home. Only all my time goes slow. Where's it gone to? I don't know. But maybe times will tell. take a train and go back home. Hop a freight and go back
home. Listening to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches. Welcome back. We're talking about the Scottsboro Boys, which is being shown at Playhouse on Park June 26th through August 4th in West Hartford. You can find it on their web house, Playhouse on Park. So as we're talking about it, and so in between breaks, for those of you who are listening, we're just having these other conversations that go along with it.
We are.
Because truly, the Scottsboro Boys is really at a time where you're thinking about the production that's out now on Netflix, When They See Us, which is really telling the story of the Central Park Five, showing that from 1931 to the 1990s, very little has changed.
Right.
And so when you think about the case of the Scottsboro Boys, I think it's one of the things that is really very poignant at the end of the production, it tells a story of what happened to each one of the men. Mm-hmm. And so talk about the aftermath of the experience for these men of being in this case. What happened to their lives?
You will hear at the end of our show in a final number about what happened to each of the boys. And it's heart-wrenching because one leaves the mentor show and I don't give away, but like
they talk about it almost after,
the
history speaks for itself.
It does.
The history.
Yeah. They are destroyed. They try to rebuild their lives back, but they're lost.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you are at the time a black male, coming in 1940 something, and you're trying to rebuild your and you have a record, your opportunities are, they weren't anything before, but they are definitely none now. And that then tips into destroying the human spirit.
Yeah, think none and then think less than
exactly.
None.
Little opportunity available for a black man in the
period.
30s,
mm-hmm.
But then with the notoriety of this case, they say that Clarence changed his name. I guess he used his brother's name when he moved back north in order to try to build a life. But the ghosts were still there in their minds, so it made it very hard for them to exist. Mm-hmm. And then when we think about the fact that while they were in prison, they're right by the electric chair.
Yeah.
So imagine your child.
And the electric chair had a name. It was
Yellow Mama.
So we found out the electric chair. They named
how... Just again, as a child,
and they were using electric chair other places. It wasn't just in Alabama.
Also, it was transported in Alabama throughout Alabama.
Yeah.
Imagine a child being tortured, being beaten, and then this idea that one day, like, you're going to be in that chair.
What you're hearing on the other side of the wall.
That's for you.
And there's a number.
And also, there's
in
a name
the show
to the
that
there's a name to the chair.
It. Yeah.
How gross and gross! Like that's. That would destroy me.
Right. And so again, the success of Cameron Nebb bringing, there's a number in the show about the electric chair.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about what it's introduced through us as the guards to this child. And it is the youngest child that we were speaking to, 13-year-old. And we do it through the sake of entertainment for a moment.
Like dance,
but it's a very real happen.
And I think that's important to note for people because it's a very heavy, dark story.
Mm-hmm.
We like to say often in the cultural context, you have to laugh to keep from crying.
Yes.
So you laugh, but it is profoundly sad. But the production itself tells the story using minstrel style.
Mm-hmm.
For some activists, that was controversial in itself.
Yes.
Talk about that. Why is there still value showing minstrel?
I just think you have to know where all of this began. you have to know how dark it was. You've got to look at it. And that is sometimes what holds the progress back, is when you are afraid to look at the darkness. I think you just need to sit in it and look at it, mm-hmm. and know that we are not there. We could be a lot further, but we are not there. And then you can know what you're, the root of what you're dealing with. I think often we are the band-aids are many. The symptoms, we're dealing with symptoms. We're making sure, you didn't get lynched, but you were in jail for your entire life, or you didn't. It's all of that. So we're dealing with that, but we're not dealing with the root of it. And to go back and look at where it began, how we were treated during that menstrual time, it's that whole circus of that. And then to know that that's how they laughed at us. That's how they used our, they talked about us through, it's just evil and dark. And you have to look at it so you can deal with it properly.
And some of the intellectual, enlightened people of this generation mm-hmm. feel you shouldn't sew menstrual. They might protest that kind of production. Mm-hmm. We don't want to see and it. We want to be removed from it. And they have right. protested.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But once again, what would you say to that? Why is it important to show it?
I think that it's important to show the aspect of menstruality. Adding because of the story of the Scottsboro Boys, because it then gives it another level, not only to the story, but to show also American history. And the fact that, again, Scottsboro Boys, going into the documentary that we just spoke about,
When
they see us, thank you. It wasn't that long ago. And also, menstruality also was not that long ago. So then fusing those two aspects gives us an opportunity to be able to, and I think in a lot of people's opinion, to be able to take that energy back and say, yeah, like, this is how we do it right. In more ways than one, this is how African-Americans actually show our real faces, and this is how we can actually do it right. That's just the way that I see it. Menstruality usually, in terms of the history, is usually done by white males in black face.
Mm. Right.
So now I'm giving you my real face. As I said, in more ways than one, and I'm showing you that, like, we're here. Like, and I think that that's the power behind doing it in a menstrual style, and giving us the opportunity to be, again, to be able to really force or spoon feed you my presence, my energy mm-hmm. as an African-American male in a menstrual show.
And we're looking at cultural pain in a certain time period mm-hmm. through the lens of art, and menstrual was going on at the time.
Yes.
So
at the time,
So while the Scottsboro Boys were on trial, there were menstrual shows going on.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And also when we look at African-American survival as artists, many people had to do the shucking and jiving mm-hmm. in order to earn a living.
Yep. Okay, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that's the thing that we, as the enlightened ones you brought up, need to talk about. Because, okay, we're calling it coding now, we're calling it all these things, but that is what will make you change your perspective on what we are and what we've done to get to where we are, and who we actually need to go back and look for and reflect on and learn from. These boys were doing that on the train, in the trial, in the jailhouse. They were surviving.
Quite
they were
literally
dealing
surviving.
With things that they had no idea. Any coping mechanisms at all. We don't know what their parents taught them about surviving or like dealing with trials and dark racism alone. So then to know that they had to deal and get through that, the survival, the attitude, mm-hmm. the hope, that they had to, even though it was being ripped out of them, it was like they still
every
had to have it
every single day.
Every single day. So to look back at it, sometimes it makes you think, what am I doing enough with what I have as the opportunity now? Because they had nothing and they did something. So I can walk in a room, I have. So what am I doing as this enlightened individual now, and things like, what am I doing to pay the proper
respect.
To what they had to go through.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes a very weird thing to look back at because people don't want to look and to, honestly, they don't want to look back.
It would be easier not to look back.
Oh, yeah.
It would just be easier to let it go.
We're like, oh, we're not there now. Right. We're better off. We know how to handle it now. We can deal with it now. But we're really not.
And we're all here, especially as artists, as storytellers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so to take the gifts that you have as actors, right, as performers, to tell the story of those that came before you, there's a high price that's paid even for you in this age. So talk a little bit about the emotional toll of playing a part like this night after night. What does it do to you as the actor in order to share this piece and tell the story?
Well, I think so far for me, it's been this experience of at points joy, and then at points of pure sadness. Because again, we're playing in a traditional minstrel show in Min, quite literally on the end of the semicircle.
Right.
And we're kind of filling the holes. So we're not necessarily playing the nine boys, but to see the emotion, to see the raw emotion even from our fellow performers and castmates. And my fellow castmate in Ivory McKay, you experience joy, but you genuinely experience sadness.
And I'm playing all the Alabama characters. Mm-hmm. So I was excited for the challenge of being the villain at first. And I was just like, okay, so this is a true story. So I remember praying. I was like, okay, God, give me the strength to play this darkness because here we go.
That's right.
Because I have got to show as best possible where I am right now in my craft and as an artist, the absolute darkness of these men that they face in the courtroom, the sheriff, all of them. Because watching all this documentary, reading all this history, they were not shy about how they felt about these black men, how they felt about Leibowitz coming from New York to represent them. They were not shy, and there was no way that they were losing this battle as Alabama people. And so I have to show the darkness of it so they can see, wow, they faced that.
So you're portraying the darkness, but also there's the complexity of you showing the humanity.
Because absolutely.
It's not to show it as just lightweight comedy.
No.
It is to go deeper. Mm-hmm. These are complicated figures with their racism.
Yep. Yes. Complicated.
Definitely.
Supposedly responsible, hired people
right.
to represent the people. A police officer, a sheriff, a prosecutor, attorney, attorney general, like these are people who are for the common good of all, supposedly, but it is definitely clear for Alabama people.
Yeah. So the Scottsboro Boys is playing with Playhouse on Park, June 26th through August 4th. If you want to be able to go to the production, look at the website for Playhouse Theater or Playhouse on Park, and you can get tickets that way. Thank you so much, Ivory McKay and Tori Linder for
being
here.
Thank you. Thank you, Madeline.
I just can't get over losing you. So if I seem broken in two, please walk on by, walk on by. Foolish pride, that's all that I have left. Sure, let me hide the tears and the sadness you gave me. I didn't ask you for it, but you gave me when you said goodbye. See the tears and cry. So do me a favor and walk on by. Please, oh, walk on.
Been listening to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches and a production of the 224 Ecospace. Reach out to us and tell us what you think. Look for Rich Answers, the Conference of Churches, and me, Reverend Dr. Shelley Bess, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Like us, follow us, share us.